Okay, he said. And you'll do whatever Josh and Billy tell you to. Okay, Richard said again. But I won't take you hunting. Not now, not ever. Call it a matter of conscience. Bobby was quiet for a long moment. I'll find ways to keep you away from her, you know. Every day, I'll find something. I'll be in the barn, Reacher said, and walked away. Ellie brought his breakfast to him there. She was wearing a miniature set of blue denim dungarees. Her hair was wet and loose. She was carrying a plate of scrambled eggs. She had silverware in her breast pocket, upright like pens. She was concentrating on remembering a message.
My mommy says, don't forget the writing lesson, she recited. She wants you to meet her here in the barn after lunch.
Then she ran back toward the house without another word. He sat down on a bale and ate the eggs, took the empty plate back to the kitchen, and headed down to the bunkhouse. Josh and Billy weren't there to tell him to do anything. Suits me, he thought. He didn't go looking for them, just lay down and dozed in the heat. The Kayanosa Draw was a water course with a bed wide enough to carry the runoff from the Davis Mountains to the Pecos River, which took it to the Rio Grande all the way down on the border with Mexico. But runoff was seasonal and unreliable, so the region was sparsely populated. There were abandoned farmsteads built close to the dry riverbed, far from each other, far from anywhere. One of them had an old sway-backed house baked gray by the sun. In front of it was an empty barn. The barn had no doors, just an open wall facing west toward the house. The way the buildings were set in the landscape, the interior of the barn was invisible except from the yard right in front of it. The Crown Victoria was waiting inside the barn, its engine idling to keep the air going. The barn had an exterior staircase leading up to a hayloft with a small platform outside the door at the top. The woman was out in the heat up on the platform where she could survey the meandering approach road. She saw the watcher's pickup 2 miles away. It was traveling fast and kicking up a plume of dust. She waited until she was sure it was unaccompanied, and then she turned and walked down the stairs, signaled to the others. They got out of the car and stood waiting in the heat. They heard the pickup on the road, and then it pulled around the corner of the barn and slowed in the yard. They directed it with hand signals, like traffic cops. They pointed into the barn. One of them led the truck on foot, gesturing like the guy on the airport apron. He brought it tight up to the rear wall, gesturing all the time, and then he gave a thumbs up to halt it. He stepped alongside the driver's window, and his partner stepped to the passenger door. The driver shut off the motor and relaxed. Human nature. The end of a fast drive to a secret rendezvous. The intrigue of new instructions. The prospect of a big payday. He wound down his window. On the passenger's side, the second man did the same thing. Then they both died, shot in the side of the head with 9mm bullets. The boy in the middle lived exactly 1 second longer, both sides of his face splattered with blood and brain tissue, his notebook clutched in his hands. Then the small dark man leaned in and shot him twice in the chest. The woman pushed him out of the way and adjusted the window winders on both doors to leave the glass cracked open about an inch. An inch would let insects in and keep scavengers out. Insects would help with decomposition, but scavengers could drag body parts away, which would risk visibility. Reacher dozed a couple of hours before Josh and Billy got back. They didn't give him any instructions. They just got cleaned up for lunch. They told him they were invited inside the house to eat, and he wasn't, because he had refused to drive. Bobby told me you ran some guy off, Richard said. Joshua just smiled.
What guy?
Billy said. Some guy came down here with Carmen.
The Mexican?
Some friend of hers. Billy shook his head.
Don't know anything about it. We never ran any guy off. What are we, cops?
You're the cop, Joshua said. Am I? Joshua nodded. Bobby said so. You were a military cop. You've been discussing me? Joshua shrugged and went quiet.
Got to go, Billy said.
20 minutes later, Carmen herself brought his armadillo lunch to him. It was in a covered dish and smelled strongly of chili. She left, nervous and in a hurry, without saying a word. He tried the meal. The meat was halfway between sweet and ordinary. It had been shredded and chopped and mixed with beans and two-alarm sauce from a bottle, then slightly overdone in a warm oven. He had eaten worse, and he was hungry, which helped. He took his time and then carried the dish back to the kitchen. Bobby was standing out on the porch steps like a sentry. "Horses need more feed supplement," he called. "You'll go with Josh and Billy to pick it up after siesta. Get as many bags as fit in the truck." Reacher nodded and walked down to the kitchen, gave the used dish to the maid, and thanked her for the meal. Then he walked down to the barn and went inside and sat on a bale of straw to wait. The horses turned around in their stalls to watch him do it. They were patient and listless in the heat. One of them was chewing slowly. There were hay stalks stuck to its lips. Carmen came in 10 minutes later. She had changed into faded blue jeans and a checked cotton shirt with no sleeves. She was carrying a straw hat and her pocketbook. She looked tiny and afraid. "Bobby doesn't know you've called the IRS," he said. "He thinks it was random snooping. So maybe Sloop does, too." She shook her head.
"Sloop knows."
"How?" She shrugged.
"Actually, he doesn't know. But he convinced himself it had to be me. He was looking for somebody to blame, and who else is there? No evidence or anything, but as it happens, he's right."
"Ironic, isn't it?" "But he didn't tell Bobby."
"He wouldn't. He's too stubborn to agree with them. They hate me. He hates me. He keeps it a secret. They keep it a secret. From him, I mean. They make sure I know it."
"You should get out. You've got 48 hours. She nodded.
48 hours exactly, I think. They'll let him out at 7 in the morning. They'll drive all night to be there for him. It's about 7 hours. So he'll be back home this time on Monday, just after lunch."
"So get out. Right now."
"I can't."
"You should. This place is impossible. It's like the outside world doesn't exist." She smiled bitterly.
"Tell me about it. I've lived here nearly 7 years. My whole adult life, give or take."
She hung her hat and her pocketbook on a nail in the wall. Did all the saddling work herself, quickly and efficiently. She was lithe and deft. The slim muscles in her arms bunched and relaxed as she lifted the saddles. Her fingers were precise with the buckles. She readied 2 horses in a quarter of the time he had taken to do 1. "You're pretty good at this," he said.
"Gracias, señor," she said. "I get a lot of practice."
"So how can they believe you keep falling off, regular as clockwork?"
"They think I'm clumsy."
He watched her lead his horse out of its stall. It was one of the geldings. She was tiny beside it. In the jeans, he could have spanned her waist with his hand. "You sure don't look clumsy," he said. She shrugged.
"People believe what they need to."
He took the reins from her. The horse huffed through its nose and shifted its feet, moved its head up and down. His hand went with it.
"Walk him out," she said.
"Shouldn't we have leather pants and riding gloves?"
"Are you kidding? We never wear that stuff here. It's way too hot."
He waited for her. Her horse was the smaller mare. She wedged her hat on her head and took her pocketbook off the nail and put it in a saddlebag. Then she followed him, leading her mare confidently out into the yard, into the heat and the sun.
"Okay, like this," she said.
She stood on the mare's left and put her left foot in the stirrup, gripped the horn with her left hand, and bounced twice on her right leg and jacked herself smoothly into the saddle. He tried it the same way. Put his left foot in the stirrup, grasped the horn, put all his weight on the stirrup foot, and straightened his leg and pulled with his hand. Leaned his weight forward and right, and suddenly he was up there in the seat. The horse felt very wide, and he was very high in the air, about the same as riding on an armored personnel carrier.
"Put your right foot in," she said.
He jammed his foot into the other stirrup and squirmed around until he was as comfortable as he was ever going to get. The horse waited patiently.
"Now bunch the reins on the horn in your left hand.
That part was easy. It was just a question of imitating the movies. He let his right hand swing free like he was carrying a Winchester repeater or a coil of rope.
Okay, now just relax and kick gently with your heels.
He kicked once, and the horse lurched into a walk. He used his left hand on the horn to keep himself steady. After a couple of paces, he began to understand the rhythm. The horse was moving him left and right and forward and back with every alternate step. He held tight to the horn and used pressure from his feet to keep his body still.
Good, she said. Now I'll go in front and he'll follow. He's pretty docile.
I would be too, he thought. 110 degrees and 250 pounds on my back. Carmen clicked her tongue and kicked her heels, and her horse moved smoothly around his and led the way through the yard and past the house. She swayed easily in the saddle, the muscles in her thighs bunching and flexing as she kept her balance. Her hat was down over her eyes. Her left hand held the reins, and her right was hanging loose at her side. He caught the blue flash of the fake diamond in the sun. She led him out under the gate to the road and straight across without looking or stopping. He glanced left and right, south and north, and saw nothing at all except heat shimmer and distant silver mirages. On the far side of the road was a step about a foot high onto the limestone ledge. He leaned forward and let the horse climb it underneath him. Then the rock rose gently into the middle distance, reaching maybe 50 feet of elevation in the best part of a mile. There were deep fissures running east-west and washed out holes the size of shell craters. The horses picked their way between them. They seemed pretty sure on their feet. So far, he hadn't had to do any conscious steering, which he was happy about, because he wasn't exactly sure how to.
Watch for rattlesnakes, Carmen called.
Great,
he called back.
Horses get scared by anything that moves. They'll spook and run. If that happens, just hang on tight and haul on the reins.
Great, he said again.
There were scrubby plants rooting desperately in cracks in the rock. There were smaller holes, 2 or 3 feet across, some of them with undercut sides.
Just right for a snake, he thought.
He watched them carefully at first. Then he gave it up, because the shadows were too harsh to see anything, and the saddle was starting to wear on him.
How far are we going? He called.
She turned, like she had been waiting for the question.
We need to get over the rise, she said, down into the gulches.
The limestone smoothed out into broader, unbroken shelves, and she slowed to let his horse move up alongside hers. But it stayed just short of level, which kept him behind her, kept him from seeing her face.
Bobby told me you had a key, he said.
Did he?
He said you lost it.
No, that's not true. They never gave me one.
He said nothing.
They made a big point of not giving me one, like it was a symbol.
So he was lying?
She nodded away from him.
I told you, don't believe anything he says.
He said the door's never locked anyway.
Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't.
He told me you don't have to knock either.
That's a lie, too, she said. Since Sloop's been gone, if I don't knock, they run and grab a rifle. Then they go, oh, sorry, but strangers prowling around the house make us nervous, like a big pretend show.
He said nothing.
Bobby's a liar, Reacher. I told you that.
I guess he is, because he also told me you brought some other guy down here, and he got Josh and Billy to run him off. But Josh and Billy didn't know anything about any guy.
She was quiet for a long moment.
No, that was true. I met a man up in Pecos about a year ago. We had an affair. At first just at his place up there, but he wanted more.
So you brought him here?
It was his idea. He thought he could get work and be close to me. I thought it was crazy, but I went along with it. That's where I got the idea to ask you to come, because it actually worked for a spell, 2 or 3 weeks. Then Bobby caught us.
And what happened?
That was the end of it. My friend left.
So why would Josh and Billy deny it to me?
Maybe it wasn't Josh and Billy who ran him off. Maybe they didn't know about it. Maybe Bobby did it himself. My friend wasn't as big as you. He was a school teacher, out of work.
And he just disappeared?
I saw him again, just once, back in Pecos. He was scared. Wouldn't talk to me.
Did Bobby tell Sloop?
He promised he wouldn't. We had a deal.
What kind of a deal? She went quiet again, just rode on, sitting slackly on the swaying horse.
The usual kind. If I'd do something for him, he'd keep quiet.
What kind of something? She paused again.
Something I really don't want to tell you about.
I see.
Yes, you see.
And did he keep quiet?
I really have no idea. He made me do it twice. It was disgusting. He's disgusting. But he promised faithfully. But he's a liar. So I'm assuming he told Sloop anyway, on one of his brotherly visits.
I always knew it was a lose-lose gamble, but
what could I do? What choice did I have?
This is the end of this cassette. This program is continued on side one of cassette number 4.